SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The only place in football where the offense is always on the field is on Moneyline. With the two best hosts in radio, Donnie Wrightside.
If anybody wasn't watching this, I don't know what you were doing.
And Kevin Walsh.
Forget, act like you've been there before.
On the Sports Grid Radio Network, SiriusXM Channel 159.
And we're live with you here on Sports Grid Radio. It is Moneyline on this Tuesday, coming off of a Memorial Day weekend. Hope everybody out there enjoyed. If you did have a little bit of extra time off, some decent weather, so you can't be mad at that. Solo style with you here for the next hour is Donnie. And a few times this week, we'll be out on assignment working from our New Jersey studios. But DRS will be back in your lives tomorrow. So have no worry. Today, we will get into some hoops, of course. We'll talk a little Major League Baseball. But I want to start this show. And of course, again, we're here on SiriusXM Channel 159. Make sure you're following us over on Twitter at SportsGrid, at SportsGrid Radio. And then right there on YouTube, SportsGrid On Demand. And get in the always coveted chat box. Let us know that you're here watching. Any questions that you may have, we can answer throughout this next hour. Maybe you'll have a question or two around the college football world. I know I do. College football, the EA Sports game, 26, released its cover, the deluxe edition. They also released their straight-up cover. The deluxe edition has a lot of people on it. The straight-up cover, just two. Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams. And I see that. And look, they're both stars. Trust me, this is not about to be a I can't believe who they just put on the cover thing. It's who they chose and what it might suggest for the next couple of seasons, the next couple of years for college football. Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams, Smith off the national championship, and legitimately feeling like the best player in college in his freshman season. Ryan Williams feeling not all that far behind with his unbelievable speed. Everybody remembers the game against Georgia. And Williams again in his freshman season. So right away again, for me, it's like, wow. Your cover athletes will be in the game next year. And that's great from a video game perspective, but from a college football perspective, this is really good for their game. The dream scenario, if you can have it, is when you have star retention. And that happens occasionally with guys coming back. And I mean opting to return. This is an instance, though, where these guys can't even leave and they've already announced themselves. And this is where I then get to the deluxe version and that cover. Ryan Williams and Jeremiah Smith, front and center. At least two more years, likely just the two, but of them playing at Alabama and Ohio State. Yeah, that'll do. That'll work. You've got Nick Singleton from Penn State, Jeremiah Love, Notre Dame. Those backs likely hit the NFL after the season. Caleb Downs should be a top five pick, the Ohio State safety. Sam Levitt's on there with the excellent season that we saw Arizona State have. You're not going to be able to turn it over to Cam Scadaboo. Here's the thing about Sam Levitt, though. He still technically is a freshman. He could come back, but I also believe Sam Levitt could leave. He could. Garrett Nussmeier makes the cut. Nuss is expected to be one of the top quarterbacks drafted Cade Klubnik makes the cut, expected to be one of the top quarterbacks drafted. And then you continue to look, and maybe you can't identify him just by the face and the jersey. But there's DJ Lagway from Florida. Can't leave. At least two more season is what we're looking at from Lagway at Florida and potentially going to take the college football world by storm. South Carolina, that's Dylan Stewart. Dylan Stewart, if you had to put odds to go first overall in the 2027 draft, he might be booked as your favorite. The edge rusher who immediately set college football ablaze. Again, 2027 draft, he's going nowhere. He's huge. We saw him out at the Super Bowl, by the way. Crazy to think he's like 18. The Michigan one tripped me up for a second. That's Bryce Underwood. Bryce Underwood's never even played in college. Bryce has 3 years of college football in front of him. Hits the deluxe edition cover. This doesn't even include Arch Manning, who many project will return to college football beyond this coming season, your Heisman Trophy favorite. I look at this cover. That's where you go for your stars. And I know already that from this deluxe edition cover, College Football 27, you will have Ryan Williams, Jeremiah Smith, DJ Lagway, Dylan Stewart, and Bryce Underwood. Five superstars at huge programs. Respectfully, South Carolina's not Michigan, Florida, Ohio State, Bama, but still they're making their name. So four huge programs. And here's the deal. Arch Manning, people believe we'll play two more seasons at Texas. This is a college football world. You are talking about this sport opening things up with their college football expansion, immediately making some necessary tweaks that were obvious immediately. DRS and I hit that right here on Moneyline. But trending the right direction. There's a lot of stuff going on right now with the SEC and the Big Ten, and there needs to be a way to make sure that everyone stays inside the body, I think, of college football and, you know, and clean that all up, because you don't want to mess this up. You do not want to mess up what feels like college football having a chance to, again, it's hard to beat out the NFL to lead a show, but on a split that usually is 90-10, 95-5, just start to close that gap during football season. Because year three, Jeremiah Smith, and year three, Ryan Williams, do you know how noteworthy that's going to be, considering that year two, Jeremiah Smith, and year two, Ryan Williams made the lead on the lead cover of this game? I don't know. It fires me up. We're sitting here, we're talking college football video game covers, and you might think it's nothing. I think it's a lot more than nothing. I think it's a lot more than nothing. And it's not just those two. DJ Lagway at Florida. What's he going to be? Dylan Stewart, we know he's a star. Bryce Underwood makes the cut, hasn't even played a college game yet. Could be 3 years of star play at Michigan. And then the Arch Manning piece kind of hangs over the whole sport. A fun little start. We're with you right here on Moneyline.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're live with the right here on Moneyline. It is Sirius XM Channel 159. Kevin Walsh here with you on this Tuesday. And a report just kind of came across from Mark Stein, longtime NBA reporter, saying that Chris Paul's likely going to be done in San Antonio after this year. Just find himself another spot. If he, assuming he is out, I really am fascinated to see where CP3 lands. I think if he's playing on the minimum, it's dealer's choice. He got a huge ovation from OKC when he came back. Chris Paul's always wanted that championship. It's the type of ring chasing that you, that doesn't get viewed in like a negative light type of situation. I don't think people would crush CP3 at all for going back to the Thunder and trying to grab a ring next season. I really don't. The Thunder, who knows? It's tough to know what that offseason is going to look like. Could there be a spot for Chris Paul on that team? Yes. Here's the thing. Chris Paul played all 82 this year. So I don't know if CP3 is really interested in that level of backseat. Not starting, not in front of Kasan Wallace on the depth chart. They like Nikola Topic, who they drafted in the lottery last year. So maybe that's just not going to work out for him minutes-wise. Lakers come to mind. There's always been those connections, the LeBron connections. If LeBron is back with the Lakers, it's the heavy favorite, of course. Where else could CP3? Here's the thing. You ask yourself, like, where else could CP3 go? But CP3 just went to the Spurs. And even if I thought San Antonio would have a much better season than they ultimately did, and you can't blame that all on the Wemby stuff. They were not really tracking towards anything near a playoff team pre-Wemby injury. You know, maybe that's not the most important thing to Chris Paul. Like, maybe he just wants, you know, starter, not starter minutes, but, 25 minutes a night. You go to South Beach, could he grab that? Probably. You know, what does this Boston offseason look like? If Drew is gone, if they've made some other moves, could the Celtics get him a slot in their starting lineup and Peyton Pritchard continues to come off of the bench? Yeah, probably. Probably. I'll be interested to see where Chris Paul goes. Here's the second part, though, of that report that is not surprising, but is to me probably, you know, more noteworthy than the Chris Paul landing spot. It's that San Antonio, in having De'Aaron Fox, in drafting Stephon Castle at this last year, they have a clear desire to draft Dylan Harper at the second overall selection. And those odds are out, by the way, minus 2,400 that Dylan Harper goes second overall. The fade of that to me would be to bet Harper at 50-1 to go third, because you're getting better odds on that than really anything else. Ace to go second or Edgecombe to go second are half of that price. If Harper doesn't go two, you totally could suggest, well, oh, maybe something's gone wrong and he's going to flop down the board. Maybe. But my thing is, if you say Harper doesn't go two, I'm not sure if it's Ace or Edgecombe. Now, it's likely Harper goes two. It's partly why I think San Antonio parts ways, in an ideal world with the selection. I think they've done a really nice job telling everyone that they want Harper, Harper, Harper. But this is just going to bring up, and I told you so from me, that I knew I was right about. The second it happened, I know I was the only person saying it, and it's the Spurs trading for De'Aaron Fox was an awful decision, and one they got forced into that they should never have forced, you know, allowed themselves to be forced into. It was a ridiculous move. De'Aaron Fox, at the deadline, decides that he wants to go to the Spurs, long-term, works for him, play with Wemby, they've got an open slot, you know, in Texas, he's right. And if you're the Spurs, you should have said, awesome, De'Aaron, we'll talk in the offseason. The purpose of trading for Fox to me was really nonsensical. And you might say, oh, but you know, you didn't know Wemby was going to go down. This team was comfortably below 500 at the time of the move. I at that point, Stephon Castle was emerging, so you shouldn't have been looking to chew up his minutes. Now Fox, you know, was injured, and they still kind of made it work, and it was also, you know, just such a bad rookie class. Castle had built up such a lead. But I wasn't really sure on a Castle-Fox pairing because I'm not sure on the three-point shooting of the group. You know, if you look at it, De'Aaron Fox over the course of his career is not an efficient three-point shooter, so it's not providing you the level of space that you'd love to have. And Stephon Castle's got a ways to go to becoming any type of threat from beyond the arc. Now, he maybe can get there, and again, we're talking about hitting like a 35% bar for him where you'd be ecstatic with. Because if you look at De'Aaron Fox, he had the one season where he got it to 37 in, you know, that great season for Sacramento. But basically every other year, save the sophomore season on really low volume, he's under 35%. He's under 34%. Well, now San Antonio is sat there. All right, so we have ball dominant is strong, but you know, control the rock type of guy in De'Aaron Fox as the one. Stephon Castle, again, who you just drafted, you know, freshman out of UConn, should be demanding more touches. All right, you're playing him at the two. We're not crushing it for spacing now. But now you're going to draft Dylan Harper with the second overall pick, which realistically is more equity than what you gave up to get Fox and that you put into Stephon Castle. Harper's not a three. Castle's not a three. Maybe you're going to try and say, oh, we can go, you know, 6'6 and under like the Pacers do with Nembhard, Halliburton, and Naismith. Yeah, the difference is everyone there is, you know, flying the basketball around, defending. Is that what you're getting out of the Spurs group? That team needs a time machine to send De'Aaron Fox back to Sacramento.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Okay, back with you right here on Moneyline. I'm still bothered by the move for the Spurs to get Fox. And it's not that I don't hate De'Aaron Fox. It's just, it was a bad move. That's all. It's just a bad move. And that, you know, it's going to make the offseason a little weird for them. They should see if Milwaukee wants Fox. Well, I guess Fox would veto the whole thing. We'll see what happens. I mention the Pacers because Halliburton is 6'5", Nembhard is 6'4", and Naismith is 6'6". So, you know, your 1, 2, 3 are 6'6 and lower. But the difference is Halliburton is more pass first than obviously anybody on that group. Naismith's averaging 12 a night. Nembhard's averaging 10 a night. You know, Nembhard's there to play in the flow. Naismith is there to defend. Who's playing what role for that in San Antonio? And you're going to throw Castle as a sixth man off of a rookie season? It's wrong. And here's the thing. Even if you did that, like Harper and Fox, I don't know if that works. It's weird. Because you think, you know, both guys want to be high volume scorers. And then you remember, oh, by the way, neither of you matter. We have Victor Wembanyama. So we'll see what happens. But speaking of the Pacers, look, huge game tonight at home. I expect the Pacers to win. OK Dubs. We all have them. It feels like just no luck my way right now on the slate. Again, we all have them. It's probably never as bad as we think in the moment. But it's bad for me, it feels like, right now. Laid the three with OKC last night. Foul up three strategy. It ends up being a a 2-point win. Couldn't even, you know, I thought maybe we get a loose ball foul there between Dante and SGA. We didn't. So that was brutal. You know, listen, it's hard to complain about six leg parlays. But I had fun with something last night that I wouldn't be that angry about if OKC covered. But it was a lot of the role-ish players, and we were looking for guys to score 5 points, 6 points, 3 points, Kasan Wallace. The highest was Naz Reid to get to 9. The bet lost on Dort not getting to 6. You know, and it was about a plus 850 ticket. It was a nice little shot there. You know, I had a moment. I'm watching that game. I'm going, all right, we're going to hit OKC. I had a Chet points rebounds. I'm sitting there on this nice, you know, little role player points parlay prop. Like, this is going to be a nice night here. You know, this is going to be a real strong close of the weekend. Bing, bing, boom, boom. Nope. Just be thankful you got your Chet bet in. You know, money burner ultimately on the night. That was unfortunate. That was frustrating. Why do I bring this up? I bring this up because I like Indiana tonight. You know, but at this moment right now, if I lay those 2 points, you know, I'm mentally in a headspace where it feels like game lands won. You know, now you try not to get, you know, in your head too much with stuff like that. You try not to, but I have been thinking a little bit over the weekend, just around like playing money line favorites and not. You have to factor in the juice, but not being as scared by the juice. Because at the end of the day, those numbers are there for a reason, right? Just because a lot of times, maybe minus 300, that's not bettable. Well, what if the minus 300 should be minus 900? I mean, it sounds bettable to me, right? It's something that, you know, you always evolve as a better. Especially, look, just when you're my age, when you're doing it, you know, you evolve, you learn, you have to. It's just been some stuff I've been thinking about. I'll explain a little bit more. We'll talk some Western Conference, Eastern Conference finals as well after the break. With you right here, it's Moneyline on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, lively right here. We're on SportsGrid Moneyline. I'll just, you know, we'll talk a little Moneyline for the people. You know, I wonder if this will resonate for anyone. So let's go back. All right. Over the weekend, the Yankees were in Coors Field. They were in Colorado. They were at Coors Field. So the Yanks dropped the first game of the series. Only scored 2 runs. You know, an Aaron Judge homer in the 5th that made it 2-1. They didn't score again. The Rockies actually took the lead back 3-2 in the bottom of that game. It was the Rockies' 9th win of the season. The Yankees lost that game as a minus 265 money line favorite. The next game, the Yankees were throwing Max Fried. Obviously, once again now, playing the Rockies. The Rockies have won consecutive games once all season. So, okay, up against it. The Yankees are throwing in this game Max Fried. In the 11 starts for Max Fried this season, the Yankees lost one of them. It was a 2-1 defeat at Seattle that they actually lost in 11 innings. If you actually look, the Yankees have been unbelievably dominant with Max Fried
on the mound. Of the 10 games that they've won with him starting, only two have not covered a run line of 1.5. However, the run line for this game was 3.5. But I wasn't interested in the run line. As Kyle Freeland was out there, and the Yankees have been fantastic against lefties, and Freeland looked poised to get a little bit lit up coming off of a game where he had only given up one earned run. If you look through the season, when giving up one or fewer runs, the next start for Freeland had allowed 3 earned, 6 earned, and was coming off of one of those spots now playing the Yankees, it felt like the perfect spot. The Yankees money line, though, was bouncing around between minus 310 to around minus 330, minus 335 at close. And it was one of those numbers that I was looking at, saying, forget this run line stuff, forget these team totals, forget Judge total bases. The Yankees are winning this game. That I know. The inner workings of the game, I have an idea. I imagine the Yankees will win big. 3.5 is also a crazy run line. It's the equivalent of a team laying 20, it feels like, in the NFL. But again, if you see a team laying 20, right, in the NFL, what's that money line? Way different. So I'm sitting there and I'm looking at that minus 330. Now, ultimately, I didn't touch it. Not at all. Didn't make a dollar off the game. The most confident I've been about anything in baseball this season is that the Yankees were winning that baseball game. First inning, Aaron Judge, home run. Okay? All right. Now, you actually saw Colorado tie it up, have a chance to even take the lead. They didn't. It was 1-1 at the end of the fourth inning. And then the Yankees had a 10-run fifth inning. Obviously, never looked back. They won the game 13-1. Now, I imagine you are all aware, but just in case you are not, I am not bringing this up as an I told you so. Not crushed it, knew the Yanks would beat the Rockies at minus 300. That's ridiculous. I'm talking about the fact that I knew the Yanks would beat the Rockies at minus 300, but I allowed that minus 3, you know, 20 number to stop me from making a dollar. And there's a part of me right now that's wondering, you know, has juice become too scary? Look, you have to, of course, be aware that if I'm right about this game, so let's just say this exact game, I'm right about it the first time. Let's say you laid the 320 to win $100. I'm right about it the first time. Awesome. I'm right about it the second time. Awesome. I'm right about it a third time. Awesome. Now I'm looking to go 4-0. And I drop that fourth game. I'm now under. I'm sitting 3-1, 75% on a net loss. You have to be selective. You don't want to. And again, that's talking minus 320. So that's not, you know, you can obviously, hey, this minus 750 is coming in. I'm telling you right now. If it's coming in, it's coming in. You have to be reasonable. I wanted to use this example quickly. The Liberty are at home. They're playing the Golden State Valkyries. Golden State, of course, the expansion team. The Liberty, every indication is they'll win that game. At home, come on. But minus 2,200, I'm not going to sit here and argue there's value in that. Right? What would I have to do? You know, I have to sit there and really do work to be able. See, I could give you a lot of reasons why the Yankees beating Colorado felt like a real certain thing in that moment. You know, Colorado doesn't have anything near a home field advantage, it feels like. They've been better at home than the road. But with the Yankees bats coming in, are you, you know, if you've kind of flipped that game to Yankee Stadium, are you telling me it's minus 550? minus 500. If it's minus 500 in Yankee Stadium, it should have been minus 500 at Coors Field. That's how I feel. That's a gap. That's a legitimate gap when we're talking about value. I'll throw another one out. I was thinking about it this past golf tournament. Scottie Scheffler was minus 600 to finish top 20. Minus 600. You hear that. Again, I'm sure you laugh. You should. I'm not offended or, you know, but ultimately, what were the pathways for Scottie Scheffler to finish outside the top 20 in this tournament? Withdraws, gets injured. That was it. That was it. I mean, Scottie Scheffler finished top four, by the way. Okay. If you look on the season, he has one finish outside of the top 20. Is minus 600 representative of that? We go back to last season. Scottie Scheffler, two finishes outside the top 20, two of them. But again, at the U.S. Open, I don't think I'd be looking at minus 600 Scottie. Because at the U.S. Open, Scottie was not plus 250 to win the tournament like he was at the Memorial. And he obviously didn't, or the Charles Schwab. And I'm talking this through. So I don't know if the answer is, well, you kind of use flat numbers. I don't know if the answer is 600 to win 100 or 100 to win. Let me see if I can do this quickly to find out what that would be. Hold on a second. I don't, you know, to win 16. I know it sounds laughable, but there's aspects of it you still try and figure out because it's so uncommon. Certainly in the public betting space. And I'm not, you know, here saying like this is the way forward. I'm not sure it is. Right? Because I have two front of mind instances of Scottie's top 20, the Yankees money line, you know, maybe multiplied by OKC minus three losing, but OKC minus 145 winning, where I wonder, is there a lot more value in a chalk number than everyone realizes? Something to think about here on a Tuesday on Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM, channel 150.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here. It's a Tuesday on SportsGrid. I will let everybody know that the Kevin Long Show does anticipate getting you another episode out tomorrow. Plan is to record with Joe Friso tonight following Knicks Pacers. Depending on how the game goes, could be a tough record. I expect Indiana to win. I expect Indiana to win this series now because my confidence was really bumped up after game three. I don't know if you can, JP. I'd love to get you in here and get your take on Pacers-Knicks. I actually don't even want to say anything. JP, for anybody that doesn't know, of course, our producer behind the scenes, knows basketball very, very, very well. I don't think anyone will mind me saying, certainly in the top two of people involved with Moneyline when it comes to basketball knowledge. Talk to me here, JP. What was your takeaway from game number three, the Knicks actually getting a win in this series?
Yeah, I think a lot of the takes immediately after, people have the minds of goldfish, especially in the playoffs. I saw a lot of, you know, relative uninformed takes on Jalen Brunson and what actually happened in that fourth quarter. And the real takeaway for me is just how apparent it is. Those Cat Brunson minutes need to be staggered tonight, and they need to be staggered for as long as they're in the playoffs and on the same team, because they are both dominant scorers and awful defenders on the floor together. You do not need them both to score, and you do not need them both to defend. Stagger the minutes.
So, listen, I think you definitely will need to stagger it as much as possible. They're going to start, and they're going to close. But, you know, Cat being the first sub, whatever you want to do, I think you absolutely can do that. My thing is, when it comes to blaming, you know, when we're trying to figure out who's at fault for things not working when they're out there together, I agree with what I think is now becoming the consensus. It's more on Brunson / Tibbs, figure it out. But Brunson gets into these games. He got into that game in the fourth quarter, and at no moment did he care that Cat had been lighting the world on fire. He went right back to Brunson ball. And him picking up that fifth foul, I legitimately think was helpful to the Knicks closing out the game. I know he was a part of closing it, but he came in and immediately disrupted their flow in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but especially in the playoffs, you kind of have to take each game as its own complete thing, because there's been games where, I mean, if Jalen Brunson wasn't on the floor, the Knicks lost by 50, and there's going to be games where it goes the other way, so you take that as its own thing. The Miles McBride foul trouble, I think, also helped, because you see a lot in DeLon Wright and how impactful he could be, even when he's not scoring, shooting, really doing anything other than defending players and switching well. So you take it each as their own. You see who picks up a few fouls early, rotate in Deuce, DeLon, and Shamet, and I think you have a pretty good recipe for success.
Yeah, I think it's crazy that Tibbs all of a sudden, at one moment, guys he legitimately was not letting touch the court, was running out of DeLon Wright, Landry Shamet backcourt. It's very interesting. Listen, I'm tough on Tibbs. I know that. People are like, man, all the credit in the world to Tibbs. It's like, why? Because he just, in the third game of the conference finals, opted to play guys that other people wanted to see minutes from the whole way. I don't know. That doesn't work for me. And here's, for me, truly, JP, I don't know if you disagree, but I look at that game and I feel very confident now that the Pacers will actually win this series, because I think the Knicks have this thing where you're looking at their superstars and they're an unsettling 1-2 combination. And I don't trust everybody involved then to be able to figure that out on the fly.
Yeah, I'm not super confident either way, despite being a Knicks fan. I really do think this series was destined to go 7 regardless of what happened. So I still see it going that way. And then you get to game 7, and like last year, let's see who's healthy, let's see who's out there and tip the ball and see what happens.
Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating. You know, I initially thought that the series would be Knicks in 7. I've, you know, my pre-season investments in the Indiana Pacers, so that's kind of where the rooting has been. I've been really torn on a lot of games in this series. I did say going into game 2, you know, that must win for the Knicks was real ominous. It just felt like they really let one get away in that opener, and that was the case. Obviously, they get the game back despite being down 20, which was incredible. And you know, you give these two teams credit for their ability to come back. And whichever one makes it out, it's going to obviously need it when OKC is inevitably up 25 multiple times on these guys at some point again in the NBA Finals. My thing though for the Knicks now is, if Indiana does win tonight, which I think they will, there's been a couple of times, you know, where you think, all right, well, if this team can steal this game, and they just don't steal the game. Like, I thought that the Bucks were going to win game 5. The Bucks had it. Improbable Pacers victory. I thought that the Cavs, of course, would win the fifth game on their home floor. Indiana takes it. You know, the crazy thing is, the most dominant team record-wise, it's still been the Indiana Pacers in these playoffs, not the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, you got the two most resilient teams in the NBA, and they're both geckos. You rip their tails off, they just grow them back. So you never know what's going to happen when these two get on the court, and that's what Jalen Brunson said after the game. Unpredictable is how this series has been.
Yeah, and he's certainly not wrong. And this game tonight is going to get a lot of coverage. You do have, though, a huge WNBA slate if you're interested. It's a 5-game slate. I will say one of the big story now around the WNBA is the Caitlin Clark injury. If you missed that over the weekend, a quad strain is going to keep her out 2 weeks, which is a really tough blow for the Fever, because they're off to this, you know, 2-2 starts of the season. They've looked good. Their two losses are by a combined 3 points. They're only 2-2, and you know Clark, at the time of before the injury, I think was a slight MVP favorite over Nafisha Collier, but obviously is viewed as one of the best players in this league. You now have to go at it without her. Now here's the boost: Washington, Connecticut, Washington, Chicago. Those are the next 4 games. With Golden State involved, those are viewed as the 4 worst teams in the league. So your next four games are against bottom four teams. That's a huge lift. And realistically, if you're the Fever, not that you should go 4-0 because you don't have Caitlin Clark, but you at minimum should be 2-2. Then follow-up game, the next game after that would be on the 10th of June. That's 2 weeks away. Maybe she's back. If not, you don't play then again until the 14th. You missed that game against the Liberty. You're now 3 weeks. It's Connecticut, Golden State. They're in a fine enough spot, the Fever. Little Western Conference quickly. Next, Moneyline.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, back with you on SportsGrid. I want to throw something out here to the people. Western Conference Finals, Thunder 128, Timberwolves 126. SGA, 40 points, first 40-point playoff game for him in his career. 9 boards, 10 assists. Just missed out on that triple-double. SGA, by the way, as far as triple-doubles go, he's not had one all season, didn't have one all of last season, didn't have one the year before that. It would have been pretty incredible if his first... I mean, it would have been second ever triple-double with the Thunder, I think third of his career. But if he would have pulled that off in the playoffs while scoring 40, I know the 13-30 isn't great, but he made up for it in a lot of ways. The incredible thing is the 40 points, it somehow when I, you know, was looking at the final numbers, I was like, oh, Jalen Williams at 34? How'd that happen? And then you remember it's like, yeah, he hit a ton of threes, and he made 6 threes in the game. Paired it with 3 steals, 5 dimes. When we're evaluating the best players in this series, Anthony Edwards is currently being outplayed by Jalen Williams. And I don't really know how you win the argument if you're on the Ant side. I mean, again, if you just look in the totality, J-Dub is at 23-6-4. With 2.5 steals a game on 49-50-85 shooting. Ant is at 24 points a game, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, half a steal, half a block on 49-31-69 shooting. So, I mean, the landscape of the numbers, efficiency plus defense, to me, that says J-Dub. You want to score it like a boxing match? Good with me. We can do that. Game number one, 19-8-5 for J-Dub. 40% from the floor, full roundup. 5 steals. Ant, 18-9-3. 1 block. Again, 40% from the field. Turn the ball over 4 times. J-Dub didn't turn it over. Pretty clean J-Dub to me. Game two, 26-10-5 for J-Dub, 60% from the floor. Ant, 32-9-6. But, you know, 12 of 26 from the field, 1 of 9 from 3. It's close. I'm okay giving Ant the nod there if you want. You can. It's up to you. Here's the thing. You're going to need it. Game number three, obviously, and I don't have to go through the numbers. And then game number four, again, obviously, Jalen Williams. Here's my thing. So the last two have been really obvious. I think it's much easier to sell Jalen won the first two games, especially when you look at who won the games, than Ant won the first two games. Now, you would say to me, look, Ant's got a lot more of responsibility and attention being put on him. If you asked OKC and Minnesota, Truth Serum, you know, hey, we're going to make the swap here. Would Minnesota be in a better spot with J-Dub instead of Ant? No. No. I'm not saying that. Would OKC, if they had Ant instead of J-Dub, be in a better? Yeah. Ant's better than Jalen Williams. He's not playing like it. And if anything, you shouldn't be able to make the argument. Because then you're drawing dead. There's no argument who the best player in this series has been. There's a very real argument as to who's been the second best player in this series. And I think the argument goes to Jalen Williams. That's me. So for Anthony Edwards, it could very well be the second year in a row he gets to the conference finals and is outplayed by this number two guy. Luka was a different stratosphere than Ant last year in the conference finals. The battle was Ant versus Kyrie. It was close. It was really, really close. Those are not the battles that Ant is supposed to be in. I said this after game one or two, whatever it was, but man, there is a really big gap between Ant and SGA right now. And that's a part of Minnesota figuring this all out. That'll do it for Moneyline. Donnie will be back with you tomorrow. Football Full Circle next right here on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.